Sports Radio 610 presents Payne and Pendergast.
Payne and Pendergast, as we go into the 9 o'clock hour with you. I need to get a new computer. It's just the...
Why?
My computer is slow, and it's old, and it sucks, and it really makes
for... How old
for,
is it?
Too old. I don't know exactly how old. It's too old. It's... Oh, you know what, Seth? It's old enough to where the little black rubber things on the bottom, each of the four corners that help grip it to a table, have all fallen off. They're all on here with scotch tape.
So, that's what most IT professionals would tell you. It's like it's the same way a horse trainer can look at a horse's teeth and know how old the horse is. That's what the IT guys will do.
The
old
black...
crusty ones. You know the ones that walk in with a big chaw of tobacco? And they still just, old school IT professional. They'll tell you like, don't look at it. I don't need to look at the diagnostics. I can tell by the wear on your little rubber grippers.
Yeah, it's dude, it's just, ugh. Yeah, like, something that should take, like, 12 seconds to put together during a break takes literally, like, 3 minutes because my computer just pauses and I type in a word and I type in, a sentence and then I sit there and watch the sentence get put on our dock letter by letter for the next minute and a half. You know what I mean?
Have you emptied your catch? Have you
gotten
your updates and everything?
Probably not. It's probably on me. I just know it's old. And so anyways, it's...
Yeah, get a new one, man.
Yeah, I just got to get a new
money
one.
Money bags. Your kids are all out of college.
Okay. Doesn't mean they're off the payroll. Although they are. You're right. I should go buy myself something nice today. All right, so power rank the power rankings. Let's do this. And before I do this, can I just tell NFL.com, could you please get your power rankings up before 9 o'clock? Like, what the hell? You're the representative of the ESPN can get them up there before 9 o'clock.
Lazy CBS, SOBs.
CBSSports.com. Oh, because you had two games last night instead of one. You can't get the damn power. I'm going to stop using your power rankings, NFL.com.
Yeah. Hey, NFL.com, maybe pay attention. They've been firing a boatload of you people over there at NFL Media over the past several months. Step up your game, okay?
We're just asking you to rank the teams 1 through 32. We're not asking you to split the atom. My God. All right, so NFL.com will not partake in this. So usually it's 5. Today it'll be 4. The 4 foremost authority power rankings, ESPN.com, SI.com, The Athletic, and CBSSports.com. So let's rank these in order of how we think they did ranking the Texans. Number 4, ESPN.com, DJ Bienemae's employer. And DJ writes the blurb about the Texans. Biggest issue on offense is the category that the power rankings sum up this week. They have the Texans 8th. I don't know if I said that. They have the Texans 8th in their power ranking. So the Texans dropped from 4th to 8th in the eyes of ESPN.com. DJ says this, biggest issue on offense, offensive line. No way. The Texans' offensive line isn't playing well enough. The Texans have the 14th highest run stuff rate and aren't consistently creating running lanes as they're tied for 15th in yards before contact. Damn it, they're the middle of the pack in anything. Feels pretty good, actually. I'm not going to lie. But although a lot of that's probably very heavily weighted and skewed because of the Colts game. The Colts game,
they ran the ball a lot, too. So, yeah, it was versus a really bad run defense. Yeah. So, if you take that out of it,
Two games have been bad. Quarterback C.J. Stroud has been sacked 11 times through 3 weeks and is on pace to be sacked more than 55 times, which is as big a concern as the run game. So, I think that matches up. Texans 8th and the offensive line being a huge issue right now.
Yeah, and the offensive line, and it doesn't have to be highbrow football analysis. Teams are making it really difficult to pass efficiently. And, dinking and dunking your way down the field is really hard to do if you don't complement it with a good rushing attack. And they're simply not taking advantage of these opportunities to run the football right now because they don't block well. So that's going to be the challenge for this team. You can talk about modern football all you want, and it's still if you're incapable of running the ball, then you're left an impotent offense because it's too easy for teams to focus on the pass and not have to worry about the run. So that right now there's just no counterpunch to teams taking away inefficient passing attack right now. They got to figure that out.
Next on the power ranking of the power rankings, ESPN.com was 4th, 3rd, SI.com. Sports Illustrated also has the Texans eighth. Here's what they say about the Houston Texans. The Texans were throttled by the Vikings on Sunday. Out of the three quarterbacks who have played Brian Flores so far this year, C.J. Stroud was not the worst. That distinction belongs to Daniel Jones.
Yay! C.J.'s better than Daniel Jones.
Not the worst out of three. And he was definitely not the best. That distinction belongs to Brock Purdy. His minus 12 EPA and two interceptions were par for the course, but also a needed jump. I'm assuming par for the course going against Brian Flores, not par for the course for C.J. Stroud. But also a needed jolt for a team that could possibly benefit from an early season pantsing. Houston is a good team, loaded, but it's time to evolve. Yeah. I like that analysis right there.
Yeah, and maybe that was the best time to get de-pantsed. Yeah. That week three, man, all right. They needed a reminder, or at least confirmation, what I'm guessing D'Amico's been telling them is like, hey, yeah, you won these last two games, but we can't win consistently playing the way we did in those two games. You're not going to get to face Anthony. Oh, Anthony Richardson. Ooh, you held him with less than 50% passing in that game. Yeah, you know what? That's what he's done in all three of his games. 50% or less in all three of his games.
Yep.
Caleb Williams. It's not like Caleb Williams has lit it up against other defenses. So beating genuine teams with quarterbacks that are functioning NFL quarterbacks, you're not going to do it. You're not going to get away with the way you played in the first two games. So I'm glad that if they had to get de-pantsed like this, that it happened now instead of further on down the season after maybe things wouldn't have been as correct.
Yeah, definitely. And yet I look at last year, I thought about, you know, during as that game was winding down on Sunday, Seth, and they lose 34-7, I did think about last year, and in week 14, which I think is after Thanksgiving, they did lose 30-6 to Zach Wilson and the Jets, you know, like late in the season. And if you had asked me that day, like, how are we going to feel about the Texans at the end of the season, I certainly wouldn't have said, this sure feels like a team that's going to sign Danielle Hunter and trade for Stephon Diggs and bring in Joe Mixon.
Well, you know, after the Browns game, which is even later. I know CJ was injured, but it was a complete non-contest in that game.
Right. But you come back, CJ gets healthy, you beat the Titans in week 16 or 17, and you go on the road and beat the Colts in week 18.
Oh.
Then the big thing is you get a home playoff game and you avenge that Browns loss.
Right. No, and I think that those were all good learning lessons last year, too. So it is. It's not, you know, God bless you, all the people who 3 hours after a game on Sunday need to remind everybody that it's early in the season and it's not like everything is over. Yeah, I get that. Thank you. Thank you for that. I had never realized that a week three loss isn't a death knell to your season. But so I'm very much still optimistic about the Texans. It's just that right now the glaring issues have really been brought to the light and they need to fix those things. And as we've been saying all off season with Bobby Slowick, the thing that he hasn't done yet that he needs to prove is that he can put together a rushing attack.
That's
if he's a genuinely good offensive coordinator, you got to be able to put together a rushing attack. And that's the biggest obstacle on this team right now.
Yep. All right, power ranking, the power rankings. ESPN.com was number 4. They had the Texans 8th. SI.com was number 3. They had the Texans 8th. Number 2, Pete Prisco, CBSSports.com. The Texans are 6th. They fall from 3 to 6. Here's what Prisco has to say. He's a man of few words. They lost for the first time as their offense was dominated by the Vikings. Now we get to see how C.J. Stroud and company handle the response to a bad day. Okay, let me just stop right there for a second. They went 10-7 last year. They had a chance to respond to a lot of bad days last year, you know, but I'm optimistic.
Seven
bad days. And then who knows what they did after the playoff loss, you know, they responded to the loss. Look, they responded to the loss to the Colts at home in week 2 with two blowout wins early in the year, right? Jacksonville and Pittsburgh. I'm going through this in my head, so forgive me if I get some stuff wrong. They lose to the Falcons in excruciating fashion. What do they do the next week? They come back and beat the Saints at home. You know, they lose to the Carolina Panthers. Ugh, gross. They put up 500 yards of offense against the Bucs the next week. You know, they needed a last minute, you know, they needed CJ to put the cape on, but they've generally responded to this stuff. I would say for a quick turnaround rebuild team, pretty well.
Well, and I do think too, I mean, some of the balance of running the ball versus passing the ball. Bobby Slowick talked about this last week during the press conference. You've only got so much practice time and meeting time to really focus on things. And in modern football, there's a lot of time devoted to the passing game. I think that you've really got to make this a run focused week in practice. And sometimes on offense and defense, there really is sometimes in the NFL, you got to get into a back to basics mode when it comes to fixing run defense or run offense. And it's more walkthroughs with like really going through the specific decisions and responsibilities and everything and focusing on the things that really, really matter. And that takes time away from the passing game. Right now, the passing game in total is not what's holding you back. It's your inability to run that's making it easier for defenses to focus on the pass and make the whole offense gummed up. So whatever it takes this year, it's a come to Jesus moment about getting the run blocking fixed.
They generally responded well to losses. Like the only time they lost two in a row last year was in weeks 1 and 2. You know, they went 0-2 to start the season. Every other loss last year during the season, they came back with a win the following week. So they, you know, if we're looking at that as some sort of metric to, you know, how well do they go back and correct things or maybe focus a little harder. You know, generally speaking, they did that pretty well over the course of last season. All right, last one, power ranking, the power rankings. Number one, and I feel like they've been number one for most of the year. Boy, the Athletic is just vibing the Texans, man. They don't care about the fact that they got blown out 34-7. They've got the Texans fifth right now. They've got the Texans behind only the Minnesota Vikings at 4, the Detroit Lions at 3, Kansas City at 2, and the Buffalo Bills, number 1 in the Athletic power rankings. Here's what they say about the Texans. That what they have set as the category is what's the surprise for each of the teams. The surprise for the Texans, C.J. Stroud is human. The Texans' second-year quarterback had the second-worst game of his career as measured by passer rating on Sunday. He threw multiple interceptions for just the second time in his career. That'll destroy your passer rating, by the way. Getting running back Joe Mixon back from an ankle sprain, whenever that happens, would be a big help. Mixon had 159 of Houston's 326 rushing yards this season back in week 1. In his first full game on the bench, the Texans had 38 rushing yards on 2.7 yards per carry. And Brian Flores' blitzes rattled Stroud, which we were beginning to think was impossible. So that's the breakdown.
I'll tell you one thing about Brian Flores' defense, and I think the one egregious thing about this power ranking by the Athletic that I would feel disrespected on behalf of Vikings fans is that the Vikings are one notch above the Texans. I feel like those two teams right now are just a little bit further apart than wherever their specific numbers are. I can't put the Texans as anywhere close to the Vikings right now. But watching the Vikings defense, one thing I noticed as I went around and watched other games over the past couple days, lots of defenses in the league now are doing these sim blitzes where you got 8 guys up at the line of scrimmage on defense and then 3 of them bail out or 4 of them bail out right at the snap. Nobody does it as quickly and violently, the bailing out part, as the Vikings. Like, it's impressive. The speed that they operate with in their disguises and all of those other things, it does create just this like tracer bullet effect where there's just the missiles flying past each other all over the place. It's impressive. I wonder how teams are going to evolve in playing it. And, you know, the Vikings were doing some of it last year, but this year it just seems like they've ramped it up to an extreme degree. I thought CJ did a good job, honestly, of at times finding the soft spots underneath when you do have guys who are sprinting to get back to their spots. I thought that he did a pretty good job of it. It was just that whenever they were moving the ball in the first half especially, they shot themselves in the foot. 3 of the first 6 drives were completely done in by penalties, and it's really hard to get a rhythm going when you're doing like that. I'm not sitting here saying CJ had a great game or anything, but I thought he actually rose to the challenge in a lot of respects. It's just there were too many people that were damned. They were pot committed to sabotaging the team on that day.
You know who is a dead man walking, I think? Matt Eberflus. Think about this. I'm just going off of the athletic power rankings.
But head coach of the Colts, yeah.
Yeah, head coach of the Bears.
Bears, excuse me. Yeah,
head coach of the
same
Bears.
Same team.
Former DC for the Colts. But Eberflus, and I'm just going by the athletic power rankings. I closed up the other ones, but I'm guessing it's a similar dynamic. Three of the top seven teams are NFC North. Detroit Lions are three. Minnesota, who nobody thought was this, is four. And the things Minnesota is doing are feel sustainable, too. Defense, don't put too much on Darnold's plate, run the football. Green Bay is seventh. And this is without Jordan Love. They're doing it with Malik Willis, a quarterback. Chicago is 26th. They're 1-2. Their only win is over the Titans with Will Levis literally handing them the game. And they have yet to play anybody other than an AFC South team to begin the season. Chicago's played three games against the Titans, the Texans, and the Colts. They're 1-2, and they have not played any of the Vikings, the Packers, or the Lions yet.
Yeah.
And Caleb Williams looks overwhelmed. I know he threw for 363 yards. He threw two picks. They lost to the Colts. Okay? So the other thing is Jaden Daniels is looking pretty nice right now.
He is. I'm going to give it time. As any Arizona Cardinals fan would tell you, or any defense in the NFC West, give Cliff Kingsbury's offense time.
Started Jim out Daniels, 7-0.
Yeah, what's that?
He started out 7-0 back in the day.
Yeah. And then, but like over time, you're like, okay, he's doing the same thing all the time. His secondary receivers just look completely checked out. And we'll see. We'll see exactly how it goes. But I like Jaden Daniels. And
I do too.
I do. I think he was a little bit of a victim of a. No, I shouldn't say victim. He got drafted high and everything. But I think people have slept on him a little bit just because. Because of the one, it was one really good year, and he did it with really good receivers in that offense. But I think there's a lot of potential.
You mean
there.
Like Joe Burrow?
Yeah, exactly.
Now he's 0-3 right now, but I think a lot of teams would. I don't think it's Joe Burrow's fault.
I think Jaden Daniels has the potential to not be as bad as Joe Burrow.
Yeah. All right, Payne and Pendergast with you. So the power rankings. Texans still viewed as a team for the most part in the bottom quartile. Of the upper quartile of the league, I would say. If I had to say this thing.
The upper quartile of winners were in the top quartile of that upper quartile.
There you go. Thank you, Jim. All right, up next, D'Amico Ryans speaks on the offensive line issues for the Texans. Are we cool with these answers to the questions about the Texans and their play on the offensive line, particularly coming off of one of the worst games we've ever seen a Texans offensive line play? Against the Vikings this week, and that is coming up next.
Sports Radio 610 presents Payne and Pendergast.
All right, here was D'Amico Ryans yesterday, a little back and forth with the media on the slew of illegal formation penalties.
With the penalties of lining up, right, we have to be better. We have to align right. You know, it's clear with the rules of how we should line up, so we have to line up correctly, and that starts with us.
And
the different penalties and the illegal formation penalty that you all have occurred, as well as some of the leaks in allowing pressure to get to see this crowd.
Yeah, we go to the drawing board and we fix it. We have to line up right, which I know we can do. We have to line up right, and we have to protect as best we can up front. There's five guys just working together, or if it's six. Six guys in particular, we all have to work well together, and we have to play relentless. We have to swarm up front, and we have to get the guys blocked.
Yeah, I think there's a couple things. I think some people have given the Texans a partial excuse, or they've given the Texans offensive line a partial excuse by saying, well, hey, that Vikings defense is really good, and they've made other offenses look bad this year so far. All right, well, they made the 49ers offense look bad, which so have other teams so far this year.
Yeah,
the 49ers offense and defense is not quite what they typically are, at least not yet. But the 49ers offense without Christian McCaffrey was able to run the ball effectively versus the Vikings defense. That wasn't the issue in that game. Especially in the first half of the game, they came out and they were kind of trucking them in the run game. But they were also still, you know, unable to really do much against that Vikings defense. The Texans offense never had a chance or really I mean, despite a couple of early nice runs by Cam Akers, that was a whole lot of Cam Akers making something out of nothing. The offensive line was completely inept in their run blocking in that game. So on the run side of things, yes. The pass protection side of things, I'll give them a little bit of a pass in that that Vikings defense is operating at a really high level. Their blitz packages are really, really hard to figure out and pick up. And yet, some of the mistakes they made in pass protection were the same things the Texans have been doing against lesser defenses, or just not even exotic looks. Some of the blitz pickup stuff, some of the fundamentals of offensive line play, both in the run game and the pass game, they've looked really lost.
Yeah.
It's been a lot of sloppiness, and that extends on into the formation stuff. It's that, yeah, this is a sloppy inattention to detail that seems to be pervasive on the offensive line right now.
Yeah, the notion that, hey, it's the Vikings, it's a good defense, they're going to do that to a lot of teams. I know I'm adding things on to what you were just saying here, yeah. Seth. That resonates way less with me now, because this is a team that is clearly, the Texans that is, this is a team that's clearly going all in to win a Super Bowl this year. This is a team that's making Super Bowl moves, that going into that game was being viewed as a Super Bowl contender. And this just in, you're going to have to beat good teams doing what they do well. Whether yeah. it's defending Patrick Mahomes, whether it's defending Josh Allen, or whether it's your offense going against the Vikings defense. I can take any other good team, pick what it is they do well. If you are trying to get to a Super Bowl, you're going to meet two of those teams in the AFC along the way easily, maybe three. And you're going to meet one in the Super Bowl if you're fortunate yeah. enough to make it that far. That doesn't resonate as that would resonate with me last year when 9-8 would have felt amazing in week
yeah.
three, you know?
Well, no, and I'll tell you another thing too. Regardless of whether it's a great defense that you're facing or not, it's like with Tytus Howard at right tackle. I mean, he is not moving with good technique or with the athleticism that he is capable of.
Right.
And I don't know if he's just 35 pounds too heavy or what. But there are a lot of times in that game where, I mean, we've seen multiple instances this year of Tytus Howard, frankly, getting manhandled. Just getting, and it happened to him in this game on a blitz where, because he had bad footwork at the beginning of a blitz, a linebacker comes in and just jacks him into CJ's lap. It's just physically not operating the way it is. Shaq Mason, he looks like he's about 20 pounds too heavy. Which is impressive, given that I never thought he was quite at his ideal body weight.
Right.
The veteran offensive linemen on this team that are supposed to be the leaders of your team, they're simply not moving the way they should be moving. Aside from just getting the scheme stuff correct and everything, it's a sloppy, just haphazard mess out there at times.
Yeah.
It's really ugly.
Is there a fix? I mean, what do we just have to hope that they'll
push away from the dinner table for one?
Yep.
And then, yeah, I think Chris Strausser, the offensive line coach, Bobby Slowick, the offensive coordinator, they need to be really dialed in and focused on getting these things coached up right.
Yeah.
Because there's just way too many. There are way too many tackles for a loss that are simply because an offensive lineman screwed up.
Right.
You know, because whether it's Kenyon's fault or Laramie Tunsil's fault on any given situation, they both leave a defensive tackle at the same time, and there you go, tackle for a loss. We've just seen that multiple instances. Just confusion at the beginning of a snap in pass protection where it seems like one guy's sliding the wrong way from everybody else. And it's, you know, when I get frustrated, Sean, is when I send the O-line plays out to various offensive linemen that I played with, and I get the dreaded, like, well, I honestly can't tell you what they're supposed to be doing here because, if this guy is doing this
right.
because the call was this, then it's just clear that it's clear that not everybody's on the same page.
Yeah. Another thing that happened quite a bit on Sunday, tight ends basically being set up one-on-one with edge rushers. We saw it happen multiple times with Cade Stover, rookie tight end. Here was D'Amico Ryans when he was asked about that dynamic.
When you have different protections that are called, you mix up the protection scheme. Sometimes you have tight ends, you know, blocking the edge. Sometimes, you know, they're chipping out. Sometimes they're single one-on-one. But you mix it up as much as possible. And yeah, our tight ends ended up one-on-one in a few matches, and they got us on a couple of the rushes. We had to be better and block it up, and we got to get rid of the football.
It is. Now, it does happen a lot. People don't notice it. It's kind of like a three-man pass rush. Like, usually people don't notice it when it's going according to plan. But when it doesn't go according to plan, it's the dumbest thing in the world. You know, with a three-man pass rush, you drop a defensive tackle off into coverage. And people barely notice it. It happens a lot. But it's when all of a sudden that's the issue or that defensive tackle screws up, then it's the dumbest thing in the world. Likewise on the offensive line. It's not that infrequent that you do have a tight end blocking a defensive end. But there is a method to the madness in trying to be sure that it's not something that can blow an entire play up. I think the thing that usually when it's a tight end on a defensive end, it's from a play action where the tight end comes across the field and that defensive end at least has a little moment of indecision where he's not sure whether it's run or pass. That play, the first play where Gennard got a sack, it was play action, but there was nothing on that play that really would have kept Jonathan Gennard from blasting Cade Stover as hard as he could. Like, just from really going at him. So, I do, in the manner in which they did it on that play, I question the wisdom of that, especially when it's Cade Stover and not George Kittle or somebody like that.
Yeah. No,
or even, yeah, Dalton Schultz.
Even Dalton Schultz.
You know, Dalton Schultz is, when you're a veteran tight end, you at least master the art of not getting destroyed immediately.
Getting in the
like,
way.
You know you're not going to win the matchup, yeah. But you got to try to, yeah, you hedge your bets a little bit.
Yeah.
Where Cade Stover hasn't learned that lesson yet.
Yeah. Well, Jonathan Gennard talked about that after the game. I read some quotes. You and I were talking about that, I think, yesterday, about how maybe he felt a little disrespected. I saw some quotes after you and I got done. He felt disrespected.
He said it's disrespectful to put a tight end out of me. And again, that's almost – it's by the alignment in that situation. It's that, all right, they had – Cade Stover was lined up there before the snap.
Yeah.
And that H-back position off ball behind Dalton Schultz. And, I mean, you're almost there hoping that by – you're hoping that the extra distance between John Gennard and the quarterback helps you more than the actual blocker himself. And, it's different when a guy comes out and tries to make it look like it's a run play and he's kicking you out, and then there's some indecision. There was no indecision to be had there by Jonathan Gennard.
Here's D'Amico Ryans.
And now, the other thing I will say, though, too, if the Vikings hadn't blitzed, then Cam Akers would have been helping. So that's the other part of that play there is that the blitz is ultimately what did them in.
Yeah.
Because Cam Akers could have been helping Cade Stover on that play. It's just the Cam Akers had to pick up the blitz.
Cade Stover on Gennard was a ripple down effect from everything else going on
from the blitz.
Play.
Yeah.
Here's D'Amico Ryans when he was asked, does he still have confidence in the offensive line?
For sure, our offensive line, they'll get it going. They'll do exactly what we need them to do. They had some really good reps in the game. Everybody likes to talk about the negative reps. We had a lot of good protection in the game where we complete a lot of deep passes in the middle of the field. We had a lot of explosive plays that were made, and we had really good protection. So I don't let a few bad plays dictate of who we are. I know who we are, and I know how our guys will respond. So I'm excited about our O-line and what's in front of them.
I would say you're right, and I think that's the appropriate thing for him to say in terms of supporting his guys and everything. But who you are at this point is a team that makes way too many bad plays and too many mistakes. That's who you are also, you know, and it's a classic, the offensive lineman who loves to say, well, yeah, I actually had a really good game on 57 out of 60 sacks, but everybody wants to talk about the 3 sacks I allowed. Like, yeah.
Yeah, they do.
Because those have an outsized impact on the game.
Kind of impactful.
So you are not, it's not a letter grade in terms of how many, as an offensive line especially, it's not how many did you do well. It's also how many did you do egregiously bad. And you just had way too many really bad plays. And some of it, I do give some of it only partially an excuse is that you're facing a really good defense there. But when you're facing a really good defense like that, one of the things that helps you recover from how much stress they're putting on you is using appropriate footwork, is in making good decisions, all those things. And they just put themselves in bad positions way too often to where there's no way you're going to recover from it.
Text message, Sean, did you ever address your Davis Mills is better than Sam Darnold take? I can't imagine you still feel that way. Yes, I mentioned it on the show yesterday, and I mentioned that I was probably wrong about that. at least currently.
Well, I don't know. If you put Davis Mills up there in that situation, I think that's it's impossible to say.
Maybe. I do think Darnold's athleticism is better than Mills, and that really helped him in the game on Sunday.
I would say his functional athleticism.
Yeah.
I bet Davis Mills runs a faster 40, but Sam Darnold has functional athleticism.
Right. Right.
And Sam Davis had a chance to make himself some money at the end of the game.
He did not. He had a chance to make betters on over 43.5, a lot of money too, and he couldn't punch it in.
I liked it. It made me feel better about CJ Stroud, at least.
Yeah.
So like, okay, yeah, that's right. Okay, CJ hasn't been able to be peak CJ here the next, but you can see, all right, CJ was actually doing something with the opportunities that they had in that game, even though they were few and far between.
Yep.
Whereas Davis Mills was actively turning them down.
We had Monday Night Football on the station last night, a Monday Night Football game that to most of America was just a blowout. Actually has big ramifications for the Texans over the next couple weeks. We'll talk about that coming up next.
Sports Radio 610 presents Payne and Pendergast.
I'll hang out with that guy. I like the cut of that guy's jib. I'll smoke cigars and eat steak with him on Monday at Legacy in Stafford. Speaking of Monday Night Football last night, and I think based on the results of the Jags-Bills game last night, and honestly, really basing it on the results of how those two teams have played all season. Last night was just an extreme version of both. Judging from, we talked to Ross Tucker in the 7 o'clock hour, and Ross probably watched way more of the Jags in weeks one and two than I did to get ready for last night's game. Ross's opinion on the Jags was that I don't think they played poorly in weeks one and two. Just that they got boat raced last night. They lost both those games and then got boat raced. They're 0-3 now. But this Jags game on Sunday for the Texans, Seth, they're going to get one of two versions. They're either going to get the version that is backed into a corner trying to save their coach's job.
Right.
Or they've already cashed in. Like, the version that we're going to get of the Jags, we've seen it already. We saw it last night.
Okay, one thing that you worry about if a team fires a head coach is, all right, well, do they get an interim coach bump?
Yeah.
You know, sometimes you just feel like, oh wow, there's something. It usually doesn't last, but I think the Texans got that when they played the Dolphins a few years back, right?
Dan Campbell. Yeah.
That was when Dan Campbell took over. It was like the first or second game after Dan Campbell took over. And that felt very real. And now, knowing what we know about Dan Campbell as the head football coach, I think there was some juice infused into the Dolphins by Dan Campbell that ended up in the Dolphins winning a couple of games, including against the Texans. If the Jaguars fire Doug Peterson this week, I think the most likely candidate to replace him is the guy who's also the least like Dan Campbell in the NFL, Mike McCoy. I think Mike McCoy, the quarterback's coach, who has, I wouldn't say like little personality. I don't know what his personality is. His personality is a stereotypical accountant in a movie. Like whatever you would have from central casting, like, oh, have this guy play the boring accountant.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. So I don't think they get any bump from the Mike McCoy. I like Mike McCoy as a coach and some of the things he did when he was head coach, but I don't think it's going to be him. The other thing is Shad Khan, the owner, apparently was as livid as Shad Khan can get after a game last night. I'll read this by Ryan Talbot,
okay,
who I think is a Buffalo writer.
Okay.
So remember that earlier this year, Shad Khan had said, make no mistake, this is the best team assembled by the Jacksonville Jaguars. Best players, best coaches, but most importantly, let's prove by winning now. I take offense to that. I was a fan of the Jaguars back in 1999, and those guys
were a big fan of that team.
Yeah. So, and I say that I'm not personally insulted because I wasn't one of these great players, but that on that team, there were some studs.
If
Shad Khan wants to be angry about a team underperforming, the Jaguars that year went 14-2 in the regular season, but just couldn't beat the Titans in the regular season or in the play. So they underperformed on the talent that they had. They had some incredible talent.
Yeah.
So you can go die over that one, Shad Khan.
Shad should have left that as, this is the best version of the Jaguars on my watch. Yeah,
and maybe that's what he meant.
Yeah.
But apparently he was upset. So Following the loss, a Jaguars reporter for the Florida Times Union reported that it left the usually reserved Shad Khan seeing red. Quote, "Someone close to the Jaguars told owner Shad Khan to me tonight," says this, "angrier than I have ever seen Shad. He's usually a reserved, kind gentleman. Not tonight."
Wow. Okay.
He was even unkind, apparently.
Yeah, yeah, because he. Ooh. I hear good things about him. That's interesting, because when you're bringing up Doug Peterson getting fired this week, I'm like, no. But boy, if Shad Khan's angry. But this, along those lines, this could be the Jags playing for Doug Peterson. The Texans could get a coach fired next week. Let's just put that. And I don't know that that's a motivation for players. I'm sure it's probably not. It's probably not a motivation. Like, the Texans need to play well for the Texans' sake, not to get Doug Peterson fired. But they could get Doug Peterson fired next week. If they go out and beat the Jags 38-10, Doug Peterson will not be the coach of the Jags in all likelihood. At that point, they're 0-4, and I'm guessing Trevor Lawrence played like crap again, and they just invested $200 million in Trevor Lawrence. You know, like, you're at a stage, like, honestly, you're at a stage at that point where the last 13 weeks of the season are, it's more about getting Trevor Lawrence to look like an NFL quarterback than it is getting to the postseason.
Yeah, I don't. I mean, this is a very uncomfortable spot to be in as a team and a franchise that just paid this guy, and that, like, that Trevor Lawrence interception to DeMar Hamlin, that was just god awful. I mean, it looks like he's regressing over the course of the last season and a half to an extreme degree. And he had injuries as an excuse last year. People love to point out the various injuries that he'd had. To, you know how I feel about that. Like, yeah, NFL quarterbacks are injured a lot.
Yeah.
And most of the time you don't hear much about it because the good ones keep playing well through those injuries.
Yeah.
They don't make it a reason for why you didn't play like a guy who deserves $250 million or something. So right now, with no injury excuses that we know of, Trevor Lawrence does not look like he was worth that money.
No. And they gave it to him. Which AFC South team would, other than the Texans? I think most, if you were a random fan with no dog in the fight, you would be, said, someone said to you, "I want you to root for an AFC South team." I would pick the Texans in an instant because you got a rookie quarterback, a rookie contract quarterback who might be one of the five best in the league, and you got a good roster and a good coach moving forward. Of the other three teams, which would you pick to be a fan of?
Inbred
jokes aside, I'm talking,
Right. If I didn't have to actually fornicate with anybody in those states, then I would, Indiana, I might not have a choice, but it's a weird state, man. I think that it would probably be the Jaguars still, because I still think that perhaps with a different coach or what have you, we've seen the upside of Trevor Lawrence as an NFL quarterback. We really haven't seen the upside of Will Levis. The upside of Anthony Richardson is, if he can stop being an absolutely horrendous quarterback 95% of the time, the 5% is really nice. I think Shane Steichen is really good with quarterbacks.
Yeah.
I think that he's a really good offensive coach. But Anthony Richardson, as of yet, looks like the guy that will make a brilliant play every now and then, but overall, he just doesn't have it in him to be an NFL quarterback. I mean, Sean, it's 2024. And he's gone three straight games without completing 50% of his passes.
Yeah, that's hard to do.
Imagine if it had been a backup that had come in and completed less than 50% of his passes over the course of three games.
Right.
Do you think the backup would still be in there?
Yeah.
I mean, it's just, no,
they'd find somebody else.
Unbelievable. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I'll say this, though. I saw some of the post game of that Colts win over the Bears. I came away really impressed with Anthony Richardson. He did an interview with, Stacey Dales after the game on the field. Uh-huh. And he also talked to the team after Steichen got done giving out all the game balls. Like, he did a little pep talk. And in both the interview and with his team, he was very humble. Like, he knows, he at least has the self-awareness, unlike some of the offensive linemen on our team here in Houston. Mm-hmm. He at least has a self-awareness to know, I got to fix some stuff, man. Like, he was...
Yeah, this isn't all right. This isn't acceptable.
He's like, man, JT ran the ball for 100 yards. Our defense got after Caleb Williams. He's listing everybody did their job. And he's I got to be better, man. I have to be better.
That's impressive in that it wasn't like in a sulking manner either, because that's the hard part about being a leader is you know, you still do have to project strength and everything, even then, even when you're the one that screwed it all up.
Yeah.
And then in pushing it out towards, yeah, I mean, it seems like a hell of a nice kid.
Yes.
I'm just saying, as an actual NFL quarterback, though, I don't know if it's in him to continually, like, either make good decisions or throw the ball with accuracy. He's going to be one of those guys, like it was with Josh Allen, where it needs to be a complete re-engineering of his mechanics.
Yeah.
And supposedly that's what he was doing this past offseason. The difference is that it was as he was rehabbing a shoulder injury.
Yeah.
So it's kind of tough to do both those two things at the same time.
Yeah.
I think next year, upcoming offseason will be the big test for whether he can actually just become a consistent passer.
You're saying that, and John Lopez and Reggie Atatula come into studio here. We'll bring these guys in on the conversation. As you're saying that, Seth, up on the TV screen in the studio here, you're saying Anthony Richardson needs to go get fixed the same way Josh Allen did, like re-engineer the mechanic. They are showing Josh Allen throwing dimes, like off his back foot, sidearm, like back in the like precision throws to the back of the end zone. I'm telling you right now, if Anthony Richardson ever turns into this, we're all screwed.
We're screwed.
Like, we're done. Like,
they're going to have to cancel football.
Yeah. Like, we are done.
Anthony Richardson's running ability combined. It's not like Josh Allen's a bad runner, but Anthony Richardson is just that good of a runner.
Yeah.
I mean, Josh Allen, obviously, a very good runner, but nowhere near Anthony Richardson.
Yeah.
So, yeah, you're right.
You're saying this, and Josh Allen is literally, like, sidearming a 30-yard pass to Dalton Kincaid in the back of the end zone. I'm like, oh,
no,
God.
And that's where Josh Allen, I mean, Josh Allen was definitely 100% discussed thoroughly by Indianapolis before they drafted Anthony Richardson, because Josh Allen is a shining example of a guy that actually did fix his accuracy issues.
Yep. What's
yeah, up? Seth, I thought that would be the thing that was going to get a whole bunch of GMs fired, is that, like, you know, we've always seen general managers covet the big arm quarterback and all those things. But, you know, the old thought of, you know, the accuracy, you can't fix that. And then Josh Allen got here out here and fixed it. And now it's like, oh, this is a possibility. Let Anthony Richardson do it too. Oh, man, GMs are going to be out here falling over their faces.
No, nice kid, Anthony Richardson, who I hope is doing like the C game on ESPN on Saturday nights on college football as a color analyst in 3 years. Yeah. What's up, John?
Nothing, man. Just
are you ready for Laramie Gate day two?
Oh, are we wet?
Yeah, ready?
Boy, we've got stuff, as Reggie likes to say, stacked.
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 Yeah.
Stacked on the dock.
Yeah. People are still angry with him, man. People
I don't. Reggie. I wonder what it would take for them to stop being angry with him.
Yeah. Who, the fans?
Yeah.
Yeah. Well.
Yeah, I know. I almost felt this morning. I it's rare that we get such unanimous approval when we're torching somebody. Usually there's like a good percentage of people that are like, all right, come on, guys, that's enough. I feel like people weren't happy with Sean and I because we weren't like just full blown, you know, staging the castle or storming the castle, trying to physically remove Laramie Tunsil.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So we did our best today to make up for lost.
I came into the show yesterday and Reggie was a little bit eyebrows raised. I said, they need to bench this guy.
I mean, my eyebrows were gone.
I said, they need
flame
And then I look at the text board and the YouTube and they're like, yeah, I agree. Yeah. Bench him. I'm like, oh, okay. Well,